Big show for you here today. We are live from Super Bowl week here in San Francisco. We've got Nate Tice on the show today to, go over just a ton. We get an early taste of some draft prospects, quarterback to team fits. I've got some wide receiver takes to run by Nate Tice. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day. No, a hell of a week to talk ball because it is Super Bowl week. We are live here in San Francisco, and joining me to talk a little ball, it is our guy, Nate Tice. Nate, what's going on, buddy?
Not too much. How about the setup?
This yeah,
is great.
We look great. This.
I know. No, the team set it up real nice here. The Yahoo offices in San Fran. No, it's a great start to the week. I had my option of flights. It seems like everyone from the East Coast was battling some scheduling stuff. You got ahead of it, but it seems like everybody had some battles, including our guy Chuck. But everything's going great so far.
I feel like I've already been in San Francisco for a week, and I've actually only been here since Saturday, but it's great to be here, man. You already feel like the city is coming alive. You was at Radio Row today. I know you were as well, doing a bunch of interviews, and it's just going to be awesome. We have a ton of great content coming here for you. And speaking of that, a little promo for the people out there. Yahoo Sports has wall-to-wall coverage here this week in San Francisco. We've got Yahoo Sports Daily. We've got Football 301. We've got inside coverage. We also, of course, got the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, which you know because you're watching the show right now. We're on location here in Super Bowl week. We've tons of Radio Row interviews lined up this week. I've got some players coming through. I'm sure what Nate does as well. So be sure to keep it parked right here on Yahoo all Super Bowl week. We also got NBA trade deadline and all your sports news need. I mean, my God, there's a lot going on this week.
Yeah, I mean, last year, remember, wasn't that the Luka trade happened on the day of the Super Bowl week last year? And then it was like, oh my God, the NBA is trying to one-up the Super Bowl. And then by the next day, everyone's like, oh yeah, we're back to Myles Garrett holdout news. And that's actually taking all the airwaves. No, but it's going to be a great week. Tons of good stuff. And I think this game is going to be dissected by every angle and every attribute of this game and takeaway, which I actually think is pretty fun because got some new blood.
No doubt.
Which is much easier than talking about Noah Gray for another year or the Eagles right guard situation for no offense to the Eagles. No, don't take offense to that. But it's one of those things. It's nice to talk about some new blood as well.
No doubt. And we're going to be talking about those two teams here today. We're not going to be previewing the Super Bowl necessarily. That's going to be more so on our next show. But here in this one, we're going to be talking about what we can learn from the two teams in the Super Bowl. Some takeaways here for the Seahawks and the Patriots. And Nate is going to give us a little early look at some 2026 NFL draft prospects. And I will say, I have charted enough of the top receivers to have some takes.
I know.
So I'm going to be unleashing some takes here as well for the first time this draft cycle. It's crazy, man. Like, draft season begins earlier every year to the point that it's like almost ridiculous. Yes. But alas, here we are.
Well, I think too is people that pay attention to the draft even during the season, it's so hard to not get caught up in the week-to-week hype, good and bad, of players, as I've discussed with Arch Manning over this past year. But I still think with the receivers, especially this entire class, is so wide open. It's Fernando Mendoza is one, and then every pick after that, it's like anyone's guess who could go anywhere. But I think the receiver class, that's why it's going to be so much fun to talk about. It's like everyone has them stacked so differently. We're getting some Twitter hype machines going already. Mm. So that's why I'm very curious for someone I respect so much about how you view these guys. I'm excited to maybe talk to a sane friend about this as well, because
no promises on that, but definitely a friend. Sane-ist. No promises on the sane adjacent. So that's going to be what we get into in the last segment. But like I said, first, we're going to dive into here these two Super Bowl teams and what we can learn from the 2025 Seahawks and Patriots. I will say, though, this is the first Super Bowl in 22 years that two teams did not make the playoffs the previous year made it to the big game. So for the first part of the pod, it's going to be really important to sort of dissect these two teams and what we can learn. Let's start with the Seahawks here, the NFC representatives for the Super Bowl. I've got some notes. I want to run this by you first before we dive into the conversation. Maybe this is like hyperbolic, but I do think that on both sides of the ball here, this team is really instructive to where the game is going right now. Do you kind of see that the same way or should we unpack that more?
No, absolutely. I think offensively, I think we see, I was messaging everyone to get a cutaway with you, with the director from Truman Show. I know, because you're sitting there like this. So sorry, it was just perfect and you were in the all black. It was great. Oh, well. No, but I do think that where these offenses are is one way to look at it. And they get there in kind of different ways. One, yes, is Drake May typically with some designs that open it up, but also with Sam Darnold and what Kubiak did, it's creating explosives, which we've talked about plenty, but it's passing explosives is always going to be paramount in the league. But now, especially how defenses are playing, which is actually both of these defenses. McDonald is kind of where the trend is going. We're seeing Jesse Minter gets picked up. We're now seeing Jim Leonard going to the Bills, which is actually probably my favorite hire of that whole staff because – no, Pete Carmichael's not getting me going.
Yeah, that's not going to get the people going.
So it definitely is as far as just structure and as far as intent, maybe philosophy of all. I think on offenses now, yes, defenses are daring them to be efficient or be explosive and beat them over the top, but you have to lean into the punch. Like you have to, they don't want you to do that, so try to do the things they don't want you to do,
right,
which is beat them over the top because they're trying to limit those explosive plays. So they get there in different ways, but just kind of the philosophies of these defenses and offenses kind of exactly where I think everywhere in the league's trying to go in different ways, shapes, and forms.
Yeah, and with Seattle specifically, the way they get to those explosive plays, and this is a big talking point, I would say more in like the first 70% of the season than more so in the back half. It was about like, we're going to get into these heavy personnel packages to then try to throw the football downfield. We're going to want you to match us with your base defense. And then we're going to try to throw the football over the top, specifically to one guy, Jackson Smith and Jigba over and over again. I want to unpack the JSN part of all of this, but yeah, I mean, I just did, and I know we're frigging 5 minutes into the show here. I'm already going to pub one of my other shows. So sorry guys, but reception perception. I did a show with JJ Zacharyson this past week, and we really unpacked sort of the like big picture trends that the league is going through right now and how it's impacting wideouts specifically, but really tight ends and running backs, and just the way these teams are playing with more 12 and 13 personnel. The Seahawks are one of the teams that really skewed into heavier personnel package. They were one of the more three wide receiver plus teams last year, and then this year they've been one of the fewest. And I think so they're really instructive to how teams are trying to get to those explosives, and we're seeing in a way like the slot receiver archetype die out because of that.
Right.
And like, there are fewer guys that are just full-time slot players. And again, we'll unpack the JSN specific part of that, but the way that they get to those explosive plays and the way they're trying to move the football through the air, again, I do feel like it's very instructive to where the league is going right now.
It is. It's something I've always just, I love to see the ebbs and flows of this. And I think just when we saw from the 2010s, which I think too is when like kind of, you know, our modern media kind of picked up for football, maybe the antenna of some more of the micro stuff of the game. And I think too is that that was a single high driven league, meaning cover three, cover one, because who was the best defense? Seahawks. Let's copy to them. It's funny now. It's Seahawks of a different version, but everyone's going to try and copy or do versions of. But I think too, it's that so much of the bones of good football kind of like is always there. Like, what's the best thing I have on defense? A really good front. And you can play these certain ways with having a very good front because it kind of limits other things that they can get to. But I mean, I just look at this as, I think you're bringing up the JSN stuff too, is just that like, if you want to play against these balanced defenses that play too high, you have to make them unbalanced, meaning you have to play more trips. You have to use more motion at the snap. So it's stuff that makes sense as you start kind of going why it's all happening. But also that's why guys like JSN are so valuable, because it goes, everyone's going to have a weakness. Yeah. Even if someone wants to be in quarters, every single snap or quarter shell, it's going to have a weakness, whether it's outside the slot, deep. So if you have a guy that can go slot, backfield, outside, that is just going to be so valuable. It's always the same, but it's just different versions of the same. The X 100%. Is always nice to have.
Right.
The raw offensive line is always nice to have, but it's kind of just a new variation of that, maybe.
Yeah, and I think if you need to be a number one, if you're going to be a number one receiver in today's game, like you have to be a three-position player. Yeah. You can't just now be like, I'm at the X 90% of the time. And really, I've started to say this, that if you are using your number one receiver in that way, like it's either malpractice or you're telling us that you think that guy stinks.
Right.
Like, or he's a very limited player, you know, the sacrificial X receiver. And obviously JSN played a ton of X receiver in the regular season, but then we've seen in the playoffs, like, okay, now we showed all this stuff, but we're proving he's could play X. We're giving him, and from condensed formations, like we actually talked about that on 301 in the preseason, that was going to be a big trend for this season, was these condensed formations. And this team is one of the ones that I think really proves that test case. But then, okay, now it's NFC championship time. He's in the backfield. He's moving around at the line of scrimmage. And like, you have to do that with your number one in today's league as well.
And it's really, I've taken this more from NBA, but I guess it's all sports, is that the playoffs, what you need in the playoffs is so different than the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot is going to carry over, don't get me wrong, but like, that's where the whole running the ball adage, whole like, how do you generate this? Like, how do you generate your big plays? What are the matchups? And in the NBA, you see it where it's just, if someone can't guard, that guy gets picked on over and over. It's more apparent because it's pretty cut and dry who's getting picked on and scored on every single time. In the NFL, you might not realize that we have more people that are watching this stuff, and they might be able to highlight this guy was losing over and over. This scheme was getting this guy. And I think that's what happens when you get into the playoffs, is that whatever you're very good at, how you win, is going to, they're going to try and find ways to take it away.
Totally.
Last year's Super Bowl, the Chiefs actually had a decent game plan for the Eagles defensively. But then their offense couldn't do anything, was that they took away the run. Saquon didn't go off. And Saquon was running on everybody last year. The O-line was burying everybody. But they honed in on it and said, okay, make Jalen Hurts beat us. And he was able to connect and make some big plays. So that's what's cool about when you have good coaching staffs, they're able to do this. Lesser coaching staffs, Greg Roman's of the world, those guys get exposed a little bit more. We're still up in the air with the Texans offense coaching staff can do, and Stroud too as well. But it's, I think that's what's really cool about the playoffs. Spags is kind of the epitome of this. Guys that can crank it up in the playoffs and get very hyper-specific. Mike McDonald's obviously one of these guys that can do it. But that's what you can't – the weaknesses can't hide for over 60 plays. You might be able to hide it for a few, but if it's a tight game script, you can't hide it for 60 plays.
I think that's one of the other lessons to take away from the Seahawks team. And it's going to come up with the next team, the Patriots, that we're going to talk about as well. But, man, I feel like one of the defining lessons from the 2025 season is just how much these play callers really matter. I mean, even if you look beyond these two teams, you think about the Jaguars' turnaround, Liam Cohen there. You think about Chicago's turnaround, Ben Johnson. And obviously for Seattle, we don't have to talk about it now. I know we're doing a full coaching show at some point. I think we actually might need to, I've said this, we might need to break the coaching show for this into two. There's so many things to cover. Like, we might need to go AFC, NFC. So Nate, clear your schedule. Colin and I have already made that executive decision, so this is me warning you on air right now, committing it here in person. But again, my point here is that Seattle is going to lose Clint Kubiak at the end of this season to Las Vegas, so that'll be exciting to talk about with them. But I mean, man, it just the JSN thing, it just keep coming back to that. Like, being able to weaponize him in ways where it is like, you're going to take away one thing from us, we're going to do it here the other way. And I think that, again, is one of the lessons from this team, is these play callers really matter to do exactly what you just said. Like, oh, you're going to take one thing away from us? Well, you tie my one hand behind the back, I'm going to beat you with the other one.
And that's what I think some, like you brought it up with the heavier personnel stuff, like with the Rams, it was – people had the right takeaways that they're able to do this. But like, I think one of the things that they were giving themselves the ability to do, which we saw last week against the Seahawks, they generate those explosive plays all on first and second down. It was giving themselves the ability to pivot. Mm-hmm. It was during the regular season when Davante Adams had a hamstring, then they could just go, okay, we're going to go more tight ends.
Yeah.
And again, bring back the playoffs for the NBA, like that adage or kind of like a comparison.
It's more same NBA exact thing. It's ever been
talking. I know. Maybe it's because you said the trade deadline and it got in my head. But again, that just kind of brings it up. Like, that's maybe just the smaller kind of like example of it. But it's like, again, that weakness doesn't get picked out because you have at least a B answer or something. Terrence Ferguson can do enough of an impression. This three tight end trio that we have can do enough where we generate the plays that we're trying to get, just a different makeup. If you watch what the Rams were doing, they're running spread formations out, two and three tight ends. Yeah, same formations.
It's insane.
But that's what they're just doing, multi-tight ends. So I love watching these. That's why I love focusing on McVay, is finding every year how he tries to find new advantages and mitigate old disadvantages. And I think the tight end stuff was one example of that.
Yeah, so I think spinning it forward for next year, like what we can take away, especially in the offseason when we're trying to find one of these, I always say like these value offenses, which I think Seattle ended up being, is you're looking for a really good play caller who's like in tune with the modern game. And I think you're looking for, especially when we're talking about receivers, because again, the conversation I had with JJ was it's less about the entire receiving position is down. It's like wide receiver twos, you know, like guys 12, even really it goes a little higher than 12, but let's just say like 12 to 35 is very flat, but the guys at the top are still making a big difference. So who is going to be that next JSN where it's a marriage between a really talented player who's taking the year three leap and maybe was kind of, is he a slot only guy? Is he limited in some way? And then we see ways with the play caller that they can maximize him. That's something to look out for too. But I don't think we can leave this section without talking about the Seahawks defense, because again, like I said, I think on both sides of the ball for Seattle, they're really emblematic of where the league is going. And you were talking about this, it was on 301, you had the stat that like the league is getting, from a defensive perspective, is getting so much lighter. And I think Seattle is one of those lighter, faster defenses, but because
they just play their guys every single snap. They also don't have those same weaknesses that maybe some of those other teams do.
And they have so many valid bodies to throw at problems. Mm-hmm. Like, they have just a lot of good players and not a lot of guys that are, you know, again, talking about the advantages of matchups. They can throw a different body at every problem. They have one of everything. They have a collector set of types of defensive linemen and front seven players. So when I look at them, they're, when I see what kind of like how what they get away with, that's kind of the advantage that they have, is that they can throw monsters at the problem. Totally. And that really helps. Guys that can create advantages for their teammates, like, that's always just going to be so helpful. Like, they don't blitz a ton.
No.
Their pressure, like, their sack rates are good, but it's kind of a combination of their coverages. It's just that they just don't make mistakes. It's a defense that it feels so aggressive.
So well. Charles had the great quote, like, where they're almost just like a nameless defense, or a little bit of an amoeba, but they're a bunch of superstar players within within that ecosystem.
Yeah, it's underselling them, but also he's right. It's like, you know, it's like they're just such good players. I'm glad you brought up the weight thing too, is that a lot of this stuff in theory sounds good. Like, it's like, okay, well, yeah, we win with light boxes, but you still need dudes.
Right.
And you still need guys that can win. And even a guy like Amanda Worry, who of course is getting so much pub, justifiably, he had a great game in the conference round, is that he's big. Like, he was built like an old Will linebacker.
Totally.
So it's just a hybrid position that, because of how defenses are, it's just a spread out version of what 3-4 defense used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very cool to see them kind of have the epitome of every body type that they need.
Yeah, and just again, that player like Nickeem Nworie, like, it's beyond just him as an individual, but what that position represents in modern defense is, like, it can help you in the run game. It can help you take away slot receivers and, like, that middle of the field, because you can't just have, like, your nickel defender be, like, I always come back to Captain Munnerlyn, very random Panthers player, but, like, 186-pound, like, pretty good in man coverage on those little tiny slot receivers, but, like, that guy can't be your primary nickel defender anymore, because there's just way too much positional flexibility and the personnel that these great coordinators are throwing at you. It's just like that. It's just like the slot receiver is kind of fading away. Yeah. That slot corner is also kind of fading away as well. All right, we are going to take our first quick break. We come back. What can we learn from the 2025 New England Patriots? We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. We are live here from San Francisco during Super Bowl week, and we are continuing to talk through lessons that we can learn from the two teams in the Super Bowl. And it's interesting, like, we led off the conversation with, these are two teams that weren't in the playoffs last year, and now they're both in the Super Bowl. First time in 22 years, I believe it was, that has happened.
Okay.
And for the Seahawks, it's like, okay, yeah, they weren't in the playoffs last year, but they weren't terrible.
10 games.
Yeah, they won 10 games. I mean, people were kind of surprised they blew up that 10-win team, but this team in New England, very different situation. They picked fourth overall last year. This looked like a complete teardown. And I mean, I think it's fair to say, even though this sounds disrespectful, but they're in the Super Bowl, but they're still so, like, way ahead of schedule from where they should be in this rebuild. So I think this is a much more interesting conversation, less about, like, league trends as a whole, but more like, how did this team pull this off?
And especially a team that usually, yeah, they win the offseason, aka having the most free agency money, or spending the most free agency money, but usually that's a team that, like, goes like 9-8.
Yeah, and everybody laughs at
team.
Them.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you paid Milton Williams this much money, but Milton Williams, they,
it
was like,
amazing.
If he was in free agency this year, he'd make even more money.
Spoilers for my Super Bowl preview. He's going to be a main character, I think, in this game. So, but Milton Williams, I mean, just Robert Spillane, Carlton Davis. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, they all battled injuries, but now they're going to be okay. I think Spillane's okay for the Super Bowl. So it's like they actually made an impact. Like, you could feel when they're on and off the field. I think, too, you know, May, of course, taking a leap really helps mitigate a lot of the weaknesses. But they did inject talent. Like, the offensive line last year was so barren that even if the offensive line this year is still, I would say, I would consider below average to average, it's so much better. It's gone from the worst to average. Like,
I think that's the lesson for this team, which is just how impactful it can be to go from awful to average. Yes. And I think it's really felt on the offensive line and in the pass catcher core.
Yeah.
And obviously the one true addition, well, I guess they did add Mac Hollins as well. Mac Hollins and Stephon Diggs. And, like, this version of Diggs, he's not like the elite receiver that he once was. He's more of just like a really good quality starting receiver. man, have anybody like that previously. And even the guys that were on the roster last year have all been better for that. Kayshon Booty, Pop Douglas has been a lesser player in terms of his snaps, but more impactful from when he actually gets the ball. But same on the offensive line too. Like that was probably the stone worst offensive line in 2024. This year, it's not great. It's actually been a little bit of a problem in the playoffs. But again, you can feel the difference going from the stone worst to maybe just slightly below average, average, whatever you want to say.
Yeah, I used to call it the crap to not crap, improvement. You know, using a different word usually.
Sure,
but
it's a family show.
Yeah, exactly. And we're live, pal. But no, I really, when I looked at even with the Patriots too, is that okay? Sometimes just getting enough players like Diggs coming in, and Diggs, of course, like you said, is just maybe an 80% version of himself, 85%, let's say.
Which I mean, 85% of what Diggs used to be is still pretty damn good.
Yes, and it's that you kind of accounted for Booty having a mini leap as well. You couldn't have accounted for Matt Collins literally never dropping the ball this season. It's that's the thing, is those guys have a trickle down that now Diggs can, he wins the routes that he has to win.
Yeah.
It's like a running back that gets blocks, yards blocked, that is blocked for him.
Yeah.
And that's what they needed. Mm-hmm. And now you get, okay, now Booty doesn't always have to be the guy. They can pick matchups that win, which I guess is usually Derek Stingley Jr. on a go ball. But they can get into spots that all unlocks their best parts of there. It's not always pretty with the Patriots offense. I do think there's a lot of stuff that's very old school, good and bad. But I do think guys are put into spots that makes a lot of sense for them. Pop Douglas is asked to run vertical routes, or quick hitting routes. Matt Collins is usually on digs. Hunter Henry's working a lot in the middle. They're not asked to do with a lot that they can't do, which is also speaks to what they can't do as well, they don't have the ability to align a lot of places. It reminds me a little about how I bring it up all the time, how the Jags ecosystem was. But the fact, I think they're just used better. Mm-hmm. I think McDaniels actually just uses them in a more proper football way, I guess is the best way I could put it.
Yeah, I think he's done a great job supercharging these role players there. And the McDaniels thing is interesting, and you said this at one point there, that this offense feels a little more old school than some of these Kubiak, Shanahan. If you look through the NFL right now, there's so many Shanahan or Sean Payton. I would say probably 70% of the league is Shanahan or Sean Payton.
It's rare if you're not on that.
Exactly. This is one of those teams, though, that doesn't belong to either family, even if there's some more, shared DNA here and there. But I don't know if this is true. I'm just kind of workshopping it off the top of my head. But there has definitely been a lot of times to me where it felt like, oh, Drake May is not really doing the training wheels young quarterback stuff, especially early on in the season. It's like, McDaniels is putting a lot on his plate. Do you think there's any kind of validity to the idea that maybe you just want to throw this guy into the deep end right away, as opposed to, okay, get into the shallow end, here's your play action, here's your this other stuff, put the Mickey Mouse training wheels on. This, again, I feel like they took this guy who did have a year of experience in the league, of course, but they just essentially dropped him into the deep end. And I mean, he's in MVP conversations. He clearly swam this year.
I've gone so back and forth on what I think, of course, case by case, but I remember Peyton Manning talking about his rookie year, we threw 30 something interceptions, and he said, I had to figure out what I could get away with.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's easy to say when these guys work out, and survivor bias, survivorship bias and all that. And I think too, with May last year, you got to remember when he played that Texans team in his first start, people were like,
you can't do this to him.
With the worst offensive line, with worse receivers, with worse everything, play calling, whatever you want to say. And he was fine.
Yeah.
It's fine. Yeah. I think too, is that sometimes even I get caught up with this, is like the bad of the NFL is not it's not atrocious. Yeah. It's not like a Mac offense in college, where you're watching them oh my God, they can't even snap the ball. It's just oh no, it's bad relatively.
I would compare it to when I was a kid, if I was ever scared of going on a roller coaster, an upside down one or whatever, my mom would always be like, what do you think's the worst thing's going to happen to you? And I'd be probably nothing. And she's like, okay, well then let's go on and just do it. And then again, right after, she'd be like, anything bad happening? I was like,
no.
And that's sort of this, what do you think is going to happen to these young quarterbacks? Some guys do get ruined, but it takes, in my opinion, I think multiple years to ruin a guy.
Or they're already on that path.
Right.
I think whatever path you're going on, it's just going to, we all play video games. It's like video games. The more you use a guy, the more XP they get. Mm-hmm. And totally. I think whatever path they go on, that is just, you're just going to make that faster. That path is going to happen faster, whether it's good or bad, compound whatever they are showing. Yeah. So I thought May was a guy that needed reps or needed to play early, because I think he's a guy that has cojones. He's the guy that's going to push the ball. So he needed to learn what he could and could not get away with. And so as opposed to some other guys, like a guy when like Malik Willis gets drafted. Yeah, this guy needs to sit. Like he's coming from such a raw offense, has such raw footwork. But as opposed to guys like May that show that they've carried lesser teams, that's more just getting to know process. And as far as when I say operation and process, kind of like pre-snap point. Like if you see McDaniels, he always has their quarterbacks point out whoever the mic is, which is very old school.
Yeah.
There's only two offenses that do that right now. So I think too is that when I watch a guy like May, it's like, yeah, that's what we expect because he should be playing and should be getting better and better with all those reps.
Yeah, it's just like you said, case by case, there doesn't have to only be one valid path. But I feel like this path for May is so often just like, we can't do that. We can't throw him out there with the bad team. You know, we can't let him get bad reps or whatever. But it's just, I think when you look at a guy like him, that he did have some, I don't know if I want to even call them accuracy concerns in college, but you know, he'd spray things he'd spray things every now and again. I don't think he was a consistently inaccurate quarterback, but again, he'd have some of those sprays. It's like if he gets there in the NFL and he's making some of those mistakes, like there is a lot of good learning experiences. And I do think that this, like I said, this path is so often just we can't do that. I think we've seen with Drake May, we can do that. So that's instructive going forward. Yeah. The other thing I think is instructive about this team, especially offensively, and this definitely makes sense for a fantasy conversation, is sometimes, and this has really been true for this team in the playoffs, those boring old veterans who just kind of know what they're doing, sometimes that's better than the allure of youth. And I think we've definitely seen that in the backfield where Ramondre Stevenson has been a 90% plus touch player and Travion Henderson, who had some really nice moments as a rookie during the regular season, just has gotten completely shoved away. We'll see if that holds true in the Super Bowl. And then again, even in the pass catcher room too, like I'm still excited about Kyle Williams potentially, but there was no point this year where you're like, okay, Kayshon Booty, take him off the field. Steph Diggs, take him off the field. Even Matt Collins, like we know Matt Collins does his thing too.
No, absolutely. That's, and also just like the, again, like I sometimes I'm always when I kind of like want to see the young guys and just see them get that XP and everything. But that's the thing is like they had good enough. Mm-hmm. And when you have good enough, then you don't need to see the young guys. Because at the same time, the Patriots left side of their line is rookie.
Yeah.
They needed that.
Yeah.
They absolutely needed that. And I think, again, I just think it's so cool when you see guys like Stevenson and even a guy like Charbonnet before he got hurt and then Walker step up.
Totally.
Whereas that, sometimes having those reps, it's like, yeah, they're not the best at it, but it, like it comes into play because they've seen it before.
Right.
Like maybe Walker, he has been caught on a, like last week on the Jake Bobo touchdown. That was a corner blitz and he picked it up. And I was like, I was really cautious and really curious about how he would do against the blitz, like consistent blitzing. And he picks it up no problem. And I can vividly remember him missing that prediction earlier this year. So it's something that just comes with reps, good and bad.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice that I'm Stevenson truly like runs like he makes dune buggy noises. And I finally figured it out. It's taken me all this time to figure out what he runs like, and that's what it is. Like,
you need to. I don't know what your like video editing skills are like. Maybe we can get some of the boys in the back to do that. Like, edit Ramondre Stevenson runs to like a dune buggy. I like that. That's good.
He does. It's nice that even if they don't have the ceiling, sometimes when you the ceiling raiser of the Patriots offense is Drake May.
It's Drake May, of course.
So the rest of the guys just have to do their job.
Right.
It's not the opposite when the quarterback is average and then the rest of the team has to do, you know, play like superheroes. So I think that's what's nice was when you have steady hands, as I'll call them, like Hunter Henry, Stevenson, Diggs, which is so funny. Diggs off field is not his on field persona.
Right.
He's all reliable on field, which is the funniest thing. Even Matt Collins, they get to the spot that he needs them to be, as opposed to maybe Kyle Williams, who's more explosive, but a little more freelancing at this point in time.
Totally. And again, maybe those younger players can come along in time. But right now, this is a veteran laden team, even if it's not a superstar laden team. And again, can't leave the Patriots without saying like coaching matters.
Absolutely.
You know, of course, Mike Vrabel, but again, Josh McDaniels as well too. And what they've done on defense, like Zach Kuhr and those guys with Terrell Williams being sidelined, of course, like that has been a big coaching job as well.
It's like the ball knowledge name because the people that couldn't remember his name, who's calling plays for the Patriots this year. And even on top of it, I'll bring the Seahawks back into this because this has been my running joke. Eyes rolled back in my head. It's like special teams.
Yeah,
it's like, and that usually starts at the top. Vrabel, too, like in the conference championship game, had some really nice moments in game and clock management, which I've broken down a couple times. And KOC show, actually, last week. Wasn't expecting to break down clock management on a basketball.
Well, shot clock, you know.
Yeah, it was kind of fun. I was like, all right, well, let's get into it. But I really do think that that's something that's been underrated about Vrabel. It's
because
like when you're getting these tight games, you don't have a perfect team. You have to get that 1%, 2%, 3% advantages. And he's kind of shown that he can do that as well.
All right, so that's what we can learn from the two teams in the Super Bowl. We are going to take our last break. We come back. Got some early draft. I mean, I don't even know if I can say early anymore at this point. Like, draft season has pretty much started. We're going to get into some prospect talk. We're going to do that right after this break. All right, we're back. And as promised, we've got draft prospect talk here. Yes. Nate, I mean, are you and Charles on mock? What 0.0 are we on?
14? No, I think we're on 4. That we done. Okay, it's great. It's a great process getting working through it, especially during the season when it's very silly. When you saw like some of the teams, well, I thought it was silly. I'd be like, Chiefs aren't gonna end up with a top 10 pick,
and
there they are.
Here we are.
There they are. So no, it's been fun to go through this process and kind of see everyone catch up to going, oh, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's been kind of what others like, you know, Dane Brugler, a friend of the show, is that also his insight throughout the year is so valuable for even me to bounce ideas off of. I'm like, am I missing people? And you know, mm-hmm. this is kind of what the class is, but very fun for everyone to catch up on it right now.
So that's what we're going to kind of do here on this show. We're going to go through some of your team fits from your most recent mock draft, yeah. You and Charles, and we're going to kind of get a sense of both like where players might fall and also who some of these guys are. And let's start at the quarterback position. Let's start at the top of the draft. You guys have Las Vegas Raiders taking Fernando Mendoza, your guy. Again, shout out to you. You were the first person I saw
It's just a broken clock. That's it.
But again, you were one of the first people, if you and Corey Kinnon, hyping up Fernando Mendoza. Shout so both of you guys definitely deserve a shout out for that. But sounds like he's pretty much going to moonwalk to the first pick in the draft. Like, kind of give us a sense of what sort of player he is. And again, we're going to do the coaches show, so we can talk more about the Kubiak part of there. But like, what can people expect from him as that first overall pick?
A guy that's a very situationally sound player, which I mean, that sounds like a weird compliment. Mm-hmm. But if you watch Mendoza, especially at Indiana and really at Cal, they both used a lot of RPOs. And sometimes RPOs can be looked at as a way to like mitigate the quarterback not understanding, you know, true dropback game and be able to handle dropback game after dropback or dropback pass after dropback pass. It's more at Cal's because they had no O-line. Mm-hmm. And then this year in Indiana, that's part of the system. And it's more just an early down advantage that they use because they run the ball well out of those RPOs as well. Why I'm saying all that is that when you watch third down, red zone, 2-minute, true passing situations that translate to the NFL, it's kind of where he shines. He's a very accurate quarterback, and not accurate in the like, oh, point at the completion percentage and use that as a gauge of accuracy, but true ball placement. And that's what won me over at Cal.
Yeah.
Is I'm not the best, I'll admit, I'm not the best charter. I've never really been a charter. I will wash over me.
Sure.
And it's kind of just like, okay, can I gauge of those 4 games I watched, like, all right, how many times did I really feel like he missed where the miss wasn't understandable? Sometimes a guy misses because he's getting hit or something happens. I'm like, okay, that's like a nothing. That's like taking a walk in baseball. Right. But when I watch it and when I see a guy just time after time, I'm like, man, every ball is round, spot on the money. That's when kind of won me over with him. And he's tough as all get out. A lankier build, but strong lankier build, competitive build, and a good athlete. So that's why I think he can throw on the move well, which would translate to, again, this offense, but really where the modern NFL is. Enough of a runner, too, it's more that he checks the box as opposed to being a plus athlete. I have said that my high-end comparison for him is Matt Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I view, and in Goff is kind of more like the middle comparison.
Yeah.
And I think somewhere in between there is kind of where I end up on him. A guy that sits in that kind of, maybe could be a high-end tier 2 guy, you know, the Dax of the world.
Sure.
But then maybe never push to tier 1. And everyone's saying that, like, that's a knock. That's a guy you win a Super Bowl with.
100%.
So that's what I it's kind of hard to talk about both sides of my mouth. And everyone's like, oh, he's not a good number one pick. It's like, no, he's a good number one pick. It's just that it's a difference between the guys that what I consider the purple chip, the freaks.
Yeah.
That's just what you chase. But like, this guy is such high floor is not a knock with him because there's more ceiling to him that I think he gets credit for.
I like the Matt Ryan comparison. Like, you would take Matt Ryan's career first overall every single time, especially because you get a front office job right after that.
So that's the head of football.
After doing a little lucrative studio tour there for CBS.
So, at least he church and stated it where he was like, I'm not going to do both, which I appreciate a little bit.
Sure.
Yes, he's focusing on it.
No comment on the guy who runs the team that he's about to get drafted to there. But again, with Mendoza, and I've watched a good bit of him now because I've been charting these Indiana receivers, and not to open up our text chain here, Nate, I texted you like a week ago. I was like, am I supposed to be that impressed with these Indiana receivers? Because like, I think there's some interesting potential with Surratt and Cooper, more so Cooper than Surratt. But like you mentioned just how accurate he is. And there's, and I know both of these guys have seen other people tweet about it. Like, oh, their contested catch rates, this, that, and the other. I'm like, man, those balls, like, you can't help but catch that. Like, great placement from him there. And I think it's from two different types of receivers, too. Surratt's more that big body perimeter guy, and he throws a very catchable, contested pass to him. And then with Cooper, like, he's a guy that gets a ton of yards after catch. And I do think he is slippery in the open field, but Mendoza does a great job leading him in those situations. And I think for this offense that he's likely walking into here with Kubiak, that's key. Like, getting a catchable ball, accurate ball placement so that you can get those yards after the catch here.
No, I'm glad you bring it up, because I think you see that a lot with Cooper's game. Yeah, the back shoulders and stuff with Surratt, like, that stands out. The stuff to Cooper in the slot, so many out routes. And I think this is why timing and anticipation from quarterbacks and arm strength too, why it comes into play, is you're trying to maximize a opportunity for that. Room for error. Arm strength is, I think everyone thinks of a Joe Milton being able to throw the ball 80 yards. Arm strength just gives room for error with timing. Josh Allen is a freak now because he has the arm now with timing. Justin Herbert has great timing on stuff. But you see, it gives receivers opportunity, like more room to make plays.
Yeah.
I think that's, it's something I want to do kind of more studies on, but like, why do some screens feel better with some quarter? Like, it's like, why is Mahomes able to throw those bubbles for good gains all the time? It's because they're able to be creative and get the ball out quickly and accurately and let the ball get into the playmaker's hands. And I think that's what Mendoza's best asset is that there's not a lot of fat to his game. And I think that's why it maximizes opportunities. I'm glad you kind of view them the same way though, because I kept trying to get higher even during like the playoff run. I'm like, but I've seen enough. Yeah. Like, Surratt's not a plus athlete, which is going to struggle for me. I don't think he's very long either. I think
he's also one of these guys that only lines up on one side of the field.
Yes.
There's a lot of them actually in this class. I don't know.
Oh my God.
I don't know if it's any,
we're going to talk Tennessee again.
I was going to say, I don't know that we're talking to any of them here today. Like the four receivers we're going to talk about. There are guys that play all over, but there's a ton of dudes that are going to go on day two that are just, oh, there he is. One side of the field again. And that has been a red flag. Even a guy I liked in last year's class, Jack Besh, he was a one side of the field guy, and he obviously, I did think, didn't play very much, so who even knows if he's good, but he didn't play much. Maybe it could be because he wasn't picking up the offense as much. I don't know. So that's been like a historical red flag for me, and Surratt, he's one of those guys. And yeah, I think Cooper's got potential, but to me, like when I was watching both those guys, I just felt better and better about the quarterback.
So yeah.
That's kind of where I went there. Just in terms of other quarterbacks here, you guys both have you and Charles, I got to credit you both on this one here.
Yes.
Ty Simpson.
Yeah. So even numbers for this one were Charles. So this was Charles' pick.
Okay, perfect.
But I can talk plenty about it. So
Ty Simpson going to the Cleveland Browns with the Jaguars pick at 24. I actually kind of want to frame it this way. Like, number one, do you think Ty Simpson is a first-round quarterback? Two, do you think he will go in the first round? And three, do you think there's any chance after the Senior Bowl that a guy like Garrett Nussmeier had, could he maybe close that gap there with Ty Simpson? Because I feel like this time last year there was some good pop on Nussmeier, but I think he had like injuries and stuff. Like, I don't watch college football during the regular season, so I don't know.
Yeah, him and Cam Ward for me midseason last year were battling for QB1. I'll start with Simpson. Is that, do I think he's a true first round guy? I do not. I think he's a day two guy. Even a guy that I'm truly might not have in my top. It's not a guy that in most classes I'm like, yep, that's a top 50 quarterback. Yeah. Which to me means a guy that can sneak into the end of the first round, like a Jackson Dart or something. But I just don't know. I haven't shaped it out yet. But he's a guy that there's enough red flags that scares me. Mm-hmm. Size, always going to be one. The lack of starts thing is, you have to look at history. You have to. Like, I always say, well, I can wave it away, but you have to look at history not as being foolish. But I do think that his lack of size showed up with his injuries. That's why he was injured so much this year. I also think that he has more sprays, especially when he pushes the ball.
Yeah.
And that's for a guy that how he has to win the NFL, he can't have sprays. He has to be like Mendoza. He can't miss. Be
perfectly on time, in rhythm, the whole thing. And I was charting Bernard, Bernard, who's an interesting player, probably like a maybe third.
Yep, that's what I like him guy. I like him. He's like, I like him as a glue guy.
Totally.
Like, that's how I view him.
Never going to probably be like a big time fantasy player, but like, that guy comes up clutch for us every now and again as our wide receiver three. He's got some interesting like zone beating tendencies to him. But when I was watching him, I was like, damn, this quarterback's spraying that ball. Like, he's got some wild misses in there.
Yeah, and that's always, that's where you have to, like, again, wash it, let it wash over you, because it's like, not everyone misses in the right way, like, or in the right way, or the same way, I should say.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And his misses are just like, oh, that was a clean pocket. Like, okay, that's not, that doesn't translate well.
Right.
Muddy pockets, okay, I can understand sprays a little bit more. And again, size.
Yeah.
That's where it shows up too, is size, not just durability, be able to handle pressure in the pocket, mm-hmm. be able to stand in there. So that's why I kind of just, I could see him growing, or, you know, rising up, and quarterback teams are so desperate for quarterbacks. He's a coach's kid. I could see him kind of interviewing very well.
Sure.
But that also brings me to Garrett Nussmeier, who I would be a hypocrite if I didn't bring up his size. And sure. he's not very big, but I think he's the guy that actually kind of understands what he is more. And also, I think he has a little more consistent juice in his arm. He's a little older as well. I Dane and I were texting this summer, and this is how I kind of, I said what I laughed about with Nuss. And actually, that's who he compares Nuss to, is Tony Romo.
Oh,
is nice. That, oh yeah, he's only 6 foot. Oh yeah, he's fine. He's only 200 pounds. He's fine. He's old. He's fine. Like, it's because when you watch him, it's when he was healthy. And again, yeah. he got banged up this year too. Again, size, mm-hmm. is that this is a gunslinger. This yeah. is a guy who has a good arm, I would say, that is willing to push the ball, knows what he is. He's kind of more of an efficient scrambler type, where it's kind of something that I could buy into that, as I'd be very realistic about what he could become, more of a mid-tier quarterback at best. But if you're looking at day two and you're just like, hey, let's get a body in here. We already have a vet. There's so many quarterback teams that are desperate. He's a guy I could talk myself into more. He might end up over Simpson for me when it's all said and done.
Yeah.
His end of half film wasn't great this year because he got battled those injuries. But the Senior Bowl, he did probably the most consistent player. And he was a guy that I liked a lot of the aspects of his game before.
All right, cool. I that's kind of why I wanted to frame those two guys together, because I feel like there's maybe going to be a little bit of a gap closing there, but yes. it'll be a team-by-team basis. All right, that's enough of this quarterback talk. Let's talk wide receivers. Okay, we've got four here in the first round. You've got Carnell Tate, you've got Jordan Tyson, you've got Mekhi Lemon, and Denzel Boston. Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the top here. You guys have Carnell Tate going eighth overall to the New Orleans Saints. Interesting. We have Lance Zierlein's comps here from the NFL. He apparently compares him to Chris Olave. I've seen so many different type of comparisons for Carnell Tate. I mean, I've seen all the way from like Chris Olave to, I've seen other people say George Pickens. I've said like the pre-hiatus from the NFL, Calvin Ridley at times. But then the more I've seen of him, maybe I don't love that. The bottom line though is, if you've got this many like interesting good comparisons, it means you're good at a lot of different things, which is what I think Carnell Tate is.
Is there some Devontae Smith there?
Yeah, and kind of the like way he moves at the top of the routes. Yeah, he is very long limbed and consistently catches the ball away.
This summer I really liked him. I thought of him as a top 20 guy, and then he's just only done even better than that. And that's the ball skills. Yeah. He plays big.
That's where the Pickens comp for people comes
in. I totally get that, because the sideline catches show up all the time.
Totally.
And I think that hand-eye coordination with the range, because of the length that he has, that I think he's got pretty good height and everything, but I think he plays bigger. Do I think he's a true one? I don't see that kind of upside, but I think just like Devontae's a little better, but like a high-end two type, where it just – very good against zone. I'm curious what your aspects are or what you saw. But I thought good against zone because of his feel and because of that catching range. Could show up maybe in the red zone. Also, his quarterback doesn't do him any favors.
No.
That's one I'm already fighting on. I see people see him as like the top guy battling with like Arch. And I'm like, I know, guys. He's like round three at best right now. and I think too, I don't know. He's kind of a quarterback's best friend to me. That's how I've watched him this year. I think he was a little more explosive this year than maybe I was expecting, which isn't fair because he did have some down the field plays the year before. But I don't know. I just really like his game. He's friendly to me. And I've been battling how high I rank him, but I do think he's a guy that deservedly is going in the first round and getting that hype and everything. I don't know. There's just a lot I do like about him, traits wise and kind of play style friendliness wise.
Yeah, I think he just really fits as a perimeter receiver too, which is why I actually kind of like him a lot in this Saints offense. Like that destination would be fun, because they kind of have a guy who's a little bit of like a on the fringe of being like a like he's I think Chris Olave is a one, but it's like, where does he rank within the ones? And I think Carnell Tate might end up being that type of guy for me too. Like, he's probably a one, but where does he rank within the ones? Be cool to have like those two guys in the same room. Yeah. And Olave played a little inside out this year. Like, Tate, I think, could be inside out. So it allows a lot of like pre-snap flexibility for those guys. And yeah, to me, I just love the way he stacks like man coverage defenders on the outside. He can gain a lot of ground. And even when he's got guys in his hip pocket too, he's such a good ball tracker. I just think he's going to be, he's a guy I would comfortably take in the top 10 like this. And especially, it seems like in this draft, especially a little bit similar. I don't know if I like him more than I liked McMillan last year. I might like Tate a little bit more, but McMillan was a guy for me who's like, yeah, in this draft, like, you definitely take him top 10. You feel pretty good about it. I think I actually might like Tate a little bit more, but again, pretty easy player to like.
Game is very just projectable.
Totally.
And I don't want to use high floor. Like, I don't want to use that phrase, but his game just translates easily in my head.
Yeah.
It's like, no matter, scheme proof is always a big compliment I can give. It's like, no matter what, I could just see him working out.
Like, I like that.
Yeah. And that's why, like, he might end up my receiver one, just almost, and I don't want to say default in a bad way. Just, I think his game checks a lot of boxes for me. And it's like safest to me in a weird way.
I'm going to skip actually the next player you guys have drafted. And I'm going to go to the next receiver at 21, Pittsburgh Steelers taking Mekhi Lemon. The reason I want to skip that is two reasons. One, to me, what have I seen so far, I think it's those two guys. I don't know about this dropping this, that, and the other, because like, I don't know anything about these prospects until I start looking at them. And to me, I think I've only charted four games, which is like half of a reception perception sample. But to me, I think there's a first tier of Tate and Lemon, and then I think it's a drop to the next group there. And for Lemon, though, the other reason I wanted to group him with Tate there is not just because of that tier, but also you mentioned like scheme proof for Tate. I think the biggest pushback maybe with Lemon, because you watch this guy, it's like he's an unbelievable player. I freaking love him. Like, he's awesome. I posted a compilation of like some of his catches from that Iowa game, especially. Yeah. It was just like probably one of the best wide receiver films I've ever seen for a prospect. He's awesome. But do you view him as a guy that is like more limited? Is he a slot only guy? Is he maybe less scheme proof than a player like Tate?
Of all these players, he's the one I'm most curious what his measurements are.
Same. I'm like, dude, please.
It's
him and him and Texas A&M receiver Casey. I'm like, don't be above 190.
And
195, please, preferably.
It sounds like a cop out, but that's like what I'm waiting on before how I gauge him. Because if he doesn't hit some benchmarks for me and weight, length, because then it's not Wendell Robinson.
Totally.
But are you going to be slot only? And I think no matter, even if he is slot only, he can be a top three receiver in your passing game.
100%.
Yeah.
If you're taking this guy in the top 15 picks where he's starting to get mocked.
And this is my snaps impacted kind of thing. Because then if you're specific that you're slot only, is it become the Christian Kirk issue? Okay. Because you're slot only. Now we need an outside guy.
Perimeter guys. Yeah, totally.
That's my biggest hang up with him. Because I agree with you. When his tape's awesome. And his ball skills are great. His sticky hands, and he can create with the ball in his hands. And like, it's like the downside of him, or like the low end comp for him, is maybe like Pop Douglas. Like, and that's what scares me.
Or like Josh Downs, a guy that I think is an awesome player, but had like 500 yards this season because that slot archetype, like, we go back to the Seahawks section, the lesson learned, like, that is disappearing. So you have to be somebody that in two receiver sets can play outside. Yes. You can even play on the line of scrimmage in condensed formations. I do think when I watch him, I think I see that guy, but not every team is going to see that if he's, and like, again, knock on wood, I don't think he doesn't look like this on tape, but if he's like 5'9", 190, like, he's not going to be,
you gotta be realistic on it. And that's, and that's why, So, but the thing is, I consider, and I'm still sorting it through, cause it's just like, every time I watch these guys, I'm like, oh, I like this so much. And that's what I think is great about this receiver class.
Yeah.
Is the flavors.
There's something for everybody.
And so I group these guys very similarly, like, as far as if I have my true grading, like, you know, as far as like light blue, I guess would be my best way to put it, which isn't like a hard blue for me, is like easy lottery pick. Doesn't matter where the draft class is. This guy locked top 15, you're taking him. Like, light blue for me is like, okay, top 25. I can make an argument for this. Teams that need a receiver, they could be a low end one, high end two, yada, yada. Again, different flavors. But when I look at, that's why, like, again, I want to see what the measurements are, whether like Jordan Tyson from Arizona State, medicals.
Yep.
Because that's going to be a big hang up for him. And rawness, which we've talked about a little bit before, is that going to be the knock for him? And then every guy has just a little thing you can poke at that can drop him, or all the good stuff that can rise him. So I think when draft classes like that, it's going to be so hard to predict because totally. A team that has a top 10 pick is like, yeah, that's great about your draft boards. We want this guy. And totally. That's how it goes with these
it's just sometimes is that way at wide receiver too. Like I remember when Justin Jefferson was coming out and it was just like, we need to, let's see that 40. Let's see that 40. And then he ran like a four, five, or four, somewhere in that range. But it wasn't a 4.6 or anything. It's like, okay, we feel a lot better. But I know that seems stupid because Justin Jefferson's like one of the best receivers in the league, but you're just looking to check that box. So that's that one I'm going to be like dialed in on at the combine is like Mekhi Lemon. If you're closer to 5'11", 200, he's a perfect receiver for the modern era, and it's going to be great. Jordan Tyson specifically next. He's a guy that, again, I wouldn't say I have struggled with him. I'm just not like quite sure what he is. I don't think he's bad by any means, but again, four games into the charting, I'd like to have a better sense of like we said with Lemon and Tate, I got a good sense of what those guys are. I don't think the next four games is going to like drastically change how I'm going to project them. With Tyson, I'm actually kind of looking for more information in those next four games because I do think route running really raw, not 100% if he's more of like a big slot convert or what, because like I said, he's just a hard player for me to get a handle on. Like, what do you sort of think of him as an individual talent?
I think Garrett Wilson's doing a lot in my head, and it's kind
Garrett Wilson?
Kind of like the rawness, twitchiness. They're not a perfect comparison. Yeah. I'm saying just kind of like not to get too low on those types of guys.
Totally, yeah.
These guys, types of guys are usually red alerts for me, but they also can be a blind spot for me. And so that's why I'm like, I'm cautious with this one. And that's why I kept going like, you might like him because I might be missing something. I've actually been more encouraged about it. It's just that he's so twitchy and his ball skills and be able to his range, catching range. Like he has, and I mean this in a good way, but also this might be a negative, Jahan Dotson. Remember how his ball skills were amazing, but then who cares? You couldn't do anything else. You couldn't get open to use that ball.
Luckily, they're probably not the same size
at all. Like he's bigger, exactly. Right. No, and that's what helps. He's a guy I was lower on, got warm on in the middle of the season, and now I've kind of like, I feel like I'm okay. Like, he might be at the bottom of the stack when it's all said and done. Yeah. The stack being the four guys we're talking about here. But it's a guy that the injury stuff is going to be very real. You don't have that many CL injuries. Name one, he's had it.
Yeah.
And it's hard, and especially when these guys are so close together, that's going to be the tiebreaker.
And that's
just being realistic with it. I think ideally he goes to a team late first, early second, where he doesn't have to be the dude and he can hone in on the twitchiness and the traits that he does have. So it's a guy that there's stuff that's really appealing that when it works, it works, but there is a lot of rawness. And it's like to kind of wave that away is kind of like where people make mistakes.
I don't think he's going to chart out the same way, but just like vibes wise, it's a little bit like how I felt about Quentin Johnston in that draft class, where it's like, he's probably going to be fourth of the guys that I like, which is where I sort of ranked QJ, and I still had him as like a late first.
I'm going water, early,
right? But he went higher than that, and then it was just like, you tell me that guy ends up eventually being a really good pro, I could believe it. And I think he's obviously rounded onto a solid player, or you tell me that guy's just like an outright, it isn't going to work, which is what it looked like in year one for QJ. I could believe that too. And it kind of depends on destination is destiny for a guy like that too. So he'll be interesting again. I really do like a lot of what he brings to the table, but just of these players, I think he's kind of the one I've maybe grabbed. I just still need more information on him.
Right.
With the next guy though in the group, which you have LA Rams taken Denzel Boston at the 29th pick. You really like Denzel Boston. You've said this already because
This is fantasy booking. This is I saved him to like go with the Rams. That's really
okay. I do like it though. So, but what do you like about Denzel Boston? Because I know he's a play. You've already mentioned he's a big wide receiver. You like him, of course.
He's a true X, and I think that's why I like him. I like guys that can win vertically, can win isolated. I think as I've watched more of him is that some of his yak stuff is just meh. He's just north, get north and stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't have him in the same tier as I was higher on T-Mac than you were. I remember us talking about it, but I don't have him in that tier. I don't view him as that, which to me was a top 10 guy. But I think Boston to me has a lot where what the league wants. He has size. He can win outside. He can win inside too and be that kind of zone beater on the inside.
Some of his zone coverage.
His feel is pretty good and his catching range is good and he's consistent. He comes down with those plays that are what he should come down with. He plays big. He returns punts for them. And
that's crazy.
Is a sight to see. He's a guy that I'm trying to be realistic of where I compare him, but he has a skill set that's kind of hard to find. Everyone wants a guy like this, but they don't have him. So that's why I like Boston a lot. I ended up with the Rams with him because I was just like, I want them.
You want it to happen.
The world's biggest receiver trio.
That would be pretty exciting. You mentioned being realistic with comps. this is where I told you I got a little take I want to uncork, and it's being completely unrealistic to a player that, like, I never compare guys to this player because I think he is a one-of-one unicorn. And I'm not saying that Denzel Boston is Mike Evans, but, like, there's so many times where he runs routes from the – I'm like, that is the closest thing I've seen to Mike Evans ever because he's got those long-ass strides, the big arms, and it's just like, again, that is so singular to Mike Evans. But I've been teasing that one for you, but, like, again, I don't know that he might be, like, poor man's Mike Evans. It's like flashes of Mike Evans. But
I get it.
That's a pretty exciting player. I'm not saying he's going to have, like, 1,000 yards every season, but pretty exciting player.
That's it. Mike Evans had a nice long career because he translates to any area, and I think that's what Denzel Boston does. So I'm glad to hear you say that because Diet Coke Mike Evans is actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Because Mike Evans is also, like, 235.
Diet Coke of a Hall of Famer, that's pretty good. Yeah. You've got, of course, running back and a tight end, Jeremiah Love, Kenyon Sadiq. We don't have time to talk about those guys today, but we got plenty of time to unpack them throughout the rest of the show. So, listen, draft season just started, so we don't need to go through the whole gamut right away, but that is going to do it for us today. Shout out to our guy, Nate Tice. Remember, check out all of our Yahoo Sports coverage this week in San Francisco on the Yahoo Sports and Yahoo Fantasy YouTube page. I'll be on Football 301 tomorrow with Nate Tice, so make sure you tune in for that one. This show will be back on Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern. Big time show. We've got Adam Rank from NFL Network joining the show. I'm also going to have sit downs with CeeDee Lamb, Derrick Henry, and Chris McCaffrey. Ever heard of them? It's going to be a hell of a show. We will see you all then. Until then, we are out.